Welcome back to the podcast, Spinning Podcast, Driving Humanity Forward and Green Paradox. So today we will have a discussion or dialogue between Pak Kostub and Pak Riki from Traction. And the theme or the topic will be renewable energy. So specifically, sustainability through renewable energy, and we will compare about what is in India, the condition, and what is in Indonesia. So without further ado, Pak Kostub will do the presentation, then conversation between Pak Kostub, Pak Riki, and Pak Eko. So please start.
Thank you, Paika. Thank you for the introduction. And it's again a privilege to have back on the podcast. So let me just share the screen. I hope it's visible.
Yep, yeah. It's visible.
Okay. So continuing today's topic, let's say like what's on the renewable energy and how do we achieve sustainability through this? I would like to, you know, take you through what has happened in India, and it has been a really a great case study how India could achieve its target, what it has committed in terms of going ahead with the renewable energy. So if you see the FY21, which is the financial year 21, up March 21, the installed renewable energy capacity was 94.4 gigawatts. Whereas in FY22, it's already more than 150 gigawatts as an installed capacity. This also includes, this is a mix of solar, wind, bio, and small hydro, not the large hydro projects. But it has already reached the target which was envisaged to reach by 2030. It's almost reached 8 years ahead in advance. Why it could happen? Because this is interesting. There has been a lot of focus on the renewable energy side, and government and the various sectors have played a very aggressive role in achieving this. So today's topic, or we are limiting the discussions on, let's say, like how it was possible to have a leap jump and achieve this target, almost 150 gigawatts as an installed capacity. This is basically the trends, how it has been generating from FY16 to FY21, which is the current financial year. Basically, it has been due to the government initiatives and interventions in terms of the green energy corridor, wind solar hybrid policy, and having dedicated solar parks and ultra mega solar power projects. So if you see in this, in June 2021, I'm just seeing the recent highlights. So the Prime Minister stated that renewable energy capacity in India increased by 250% between 2014 to 2021. And India has moved into top five globally in terms of installed renewable capacity. In terms of the competitive advantage, in October 2021, India retained its third rank for the EY Renewable Energy Country Attractive Index. And India was fourth in wind power, fifth in solar power, and fourth in renewable energy power installed capacity as of 2020. In terms of the policy, 2021, July 2021, government has promoted or is encouraging the rooftop solars throughout the country. And this they are doing notably in the rural regions with the help of Ministry of New and Renewable Energy. And this is a phase-wise program, and it has incentives to have the deployment, and which aims to have the installed capacity of almost 4,000 megawatts in the residential sector by 2022. And then it's also further increasing the investments in the non-conventional energy sector. And it is also promoting the FDI, which is the foreign direct investments, targeting around. And it has seen an inflow of almost $10 billion between these span of 21 years. I keep it open now. I would ask maybe Pareki to, you know, have his views on or see what would be as a learning, or how do we have a collaboration or move forward. What do you, Pareki?
Yeah, but actually to see what India has achieved so far is so impressive. This number cannot lie. You are the third rank of renewable energy investment attractiveness. This means like really attractive to invest to India. That's why some like maybe you can attract more like a big company who really focus on sustainability and also in particular on renewable energy. But right now that I can see, India still focus on like from electricity, like a solar panel, a wind solar hybrid, or whatever it is. But they focus on how to they produce electricity. I would like to know more about how India want to their plan to build their fuel, because right now in several countries they have like a crisis on energy, especially fuel, such as UK at the time. They even have a they need to building something to get a petrol, because I don't know, it's really like a wow, it's so rare to find a petrol like a fuel. I believe India is also have a biofuel program, but I would like to more about their plans on developing biofuel, or even the other like a biohydrocarbon or even electric vehicle.
Right. So, Pareki, you are right. So, this is only an element about which is talking about the generation of power. When we talk about sustainability, it has many facets. So, power is one of the facets. Because India has been predominantly dependent on coal as the fuel to generate power. The second most important point is India does not have those kind of reserves for the crude. So, it is a nation which imports a lot of crude from the various countries or the oil producing nations. And if you really see the fuel prices in India, say the petrol or the gasoline or the solar prices, those are over $1.2 to $1.3. Whereas in Indonesia, it would be, you know, less than a dollar kind of currently. It would be, say, somewhere around 0.7 or $0.8, right? So that's how the parity is. So to move away from the fuels, government of India and also the various companies here are working extensively on the electrification of the vehicles. So that includes right from the smallest vehicle, the two-wheelers, three-wheelers, three-wheelers in the terms of commercial vehicles, passenger vehicles, and also carrying it across the supply chain through, say, the heavy commercial vehicles and buses and all. So there has been a lot of activity which is happening in terms of the electrification of the vehicles as well, which would reduce the dependence on crude oil. But not limiting, what we understand is that, say, electrification is one of the option. And what happens to the fleet which is already on the ground? So there are research which are promoted in terms of, you know, using hybrid fuels. So it could be, say, blended petrols or diesels, or deriving ethanol from various, let's say, like one is jatropha, or even from the molasses of sugarcane. Or so many things are happening around that, and being seen, you know, from the purview that how we can use whatever is available and reduce the dependence on items which would increase COX and NOX content, and then again having an impact on the environment or a climate change. See, India, Indonesia are developing countries to a large extent. So if you really see the per capita consumption of these, it's very minuscule as compared to you will find it in the developed countries. Right? The CO2 emission or the per capita CO2 emission will be very less as compared to the developed countries. So as if you have seen the COP26 and the appeal that what has happened in the developed countries and what is the need of the hour in developing countries, say like India, Indonesia, is basically to have their growth path achieved, so that you know you have a balance and you have a right balance, so that you are not impacting the climate, but move very aggressively in achieving the climate goals or the sustainability goals. Because at the end of the day, we have only one planet and no other planet.
Right. Yeah. Some people believe Planet B sucks. Sorry for my language. But anyway, I mentioned biofuel because it's very related with Indonesia. Indonesia is now mainly focused there. I think the renewable energy project priority is biofuel or bioenergy in general. Now it's 40% of their renewable energy percentage is biofuel, bioenergy. They also want to build biomass. They even want to build coal firing for coal plant with a biomass. It's gonna be 4% until 10% coal firing. I don't know. It's still debatable. Is it good or not? Because it's still you burn something. At the other hand, it's like Indonesia is really focused on biodiesel right now. Biodiesel now we are on mandatory B30, and we want to increase until B100. Okay. The B100, I believe, is not going to be fatty acid methyl ester. It's going to be green diesel, because of if you use like a PAMI or a fatty ethyl methyl ester, it's going to be not more, if the blending is more than, actually the blending is more than 20% of fatty PAMI, it's going to be toxic for people, because if there is a NOx, it can affect lung.
Right.
So that's why they need to blend with green diesel to reduce that that risk.
Right.
But also Indonesia is, we are the biggest producer of palm oil. That's why at the time why we choose biodiesel, because of we have an oversupply of biodiesel. And oversupply of CPO to palm oil. And then because of that, how to absorb that? Because at the time we have like a conflict with Europe, because you cannot enter the Europe market. So that's why to absorb that product, we made like a biofuel program. So yeah, actually Indonesia like renewable energy is not because of urgency of we need the renewable energy. It's because how to save the commodities. Correct me if I'm wrong, Pak Eka.
If I may add, Pariki, what you rightly said, in Indonesia, palm oil is a major thing. And if you see the recent policy change which has happened, so government is also trying to see, you know, to have the balance between the domestic demand and also the export demand, so that you're not going way out and exporting it and having a damage, right? But what we are also made to understand is there are various OEMs who are already working on, let's say, like using palm oil as a biofuel and how it could be incorporated in the mainstream. So there has been a lot of activity which is happening around. Any thoughts, Paiko, Paika?
Yeah, I tend to agree with Pariki. but regardless, I hope somehow it can be changed to a sense of urgency that we need to move to the renewable energy. I don't know yet how it will be done. So hopefully our small podcast will have some contribution. Yeah. So the other thing that I really think about is that the difference price of fuel, like Pak Kostub say, Indonesia and India. And that difference is actually, in India case, is a motivating factor to move to renewable energy, whereas Indonesia is cheap And how can you get more cheaper? Do the people want free energy? That is, in my personal opinion, that is a big constraint now. And I also don't know what will be the solution. But it needs to be thought.
Yeah. But Paika, what I've seen in India, people who are installing the rooftop solar powerhouses or power plants or something, right, to create the energy from solar, because that's available in abundance. So people are actually supplying it back to the grid and feeding it to the grid to the distribution, and they have a net zero bill or a credit with government, so that they have to take money from government, not pay the government for getting the electricity. So that's the incentive also which the people are getting. So there is an initial investment in terms of setting up the power plant, but eventually they are, you know, recovering it in some time, and then they are say credit with the government. So they have to take the money back from the government for generating electricity and pumping it to the grid, so that others, where there is a scarcity or where there is a demand, it could be used. So it is getting balanced. More so, why sustainability is because of this focus, there has been a lot of innovations or innovative ideas which are coming up, which is helping the SMEs, which is a small and medium enterprises, and creating a lot of jobs and opportunities, because that's happening at the grassroots level, where usually the big companies or the big MNCs or organizations may not be able to reach. So there has been, you know, the reach has been to the level, which is generating ideas or creating opportunities, so that, you know, it's this entire cycle which is getting completed, and new industries are coming up, new opportunities are coming up. And that's which, while this happens, there is a benefit to the individual and also to the environment and climate.
Okay, I have another question. How about the renewable energy price in India? Because in Indonesia, the branding or the stigma is always our renewable energy is more expensive than fossil fuel. And how about in India?
See, as I said, Pariki, if I see the two aspects, one is, say, dependence on coal. So India still needs coal, which is to be imported, because the Indian coal is not that, you know, great in terms of the calorific value, and it has a higher ash content. So either it needs to import coal from Australia, or for that matter, Indonesia, to fuel their thermal power plants. So there's still a dollar bill. Whereas when you come back to, say, you are developing the energy locally, then you start getting the advantage, because you are not paying, you know, in terms of a regular recurring cost in importing. Same goes with the crude oil, right? So these are basically the bills or which for the government, when start reducing, government can invest that available money in various infrastructure projects and create these kind of mega projects. Let's say, like I was referring on solar parks and ultra mega solar power projects. So they can secure lands. It could be a barren land, not an agreeable land or something, in some part of the country, and they can set up a big solar plant and harness the available solar energy to create power and then feed it to the grid and supply it across the nation. So that's how things are happening. So it's a mix of all aspects, or considering all the environmental aspects as well, and having a balance being laid out. So price-wise, it's getting competitive. It's getting competitive. And at the end of the day, if an individual is able to, you know, save or have a credit with the government, not, let's say, like, he does not have to pay the government, but he has to take from the government, it's a different kind of a motivation, right?
Yeah. But I think the interesting point for you is that produce energy locally. Actually, yes. Indonesia is an archipelago country, right? We have a lot of islands. And one big issue is also the distribution of energy in Indonesia. It makes the cost is really way more expensive. That's why in East Indonesia, the energy will be cost more than in West or in the Central. Because, of course, for the distribution wise, it's more expensive if you go to East, because there is no infrastructure or such a thing that can support the distribution. So when you start, when you said like a purchase region locally, I was thinking like it's not. I think energy is not supposed to be centralized.
Right.
It's supposed to produce. It's like a one island have one their own resource in Indonesia. I mean, I'm just trying to take away something from you. What do you think, Pak Eko?
Yeah, Pak Ricky, interesting comment you made that energy should be produced or developed within location, as what Pak Kostop mentioned before as well. And the example that Pak Kostop says that the India people are starting to install rooftop solar panel. I see also some individuals or private sectors in Indonesia also starting to install their own rooftop solar panels. Yeah, be it for personal use, or they some of them also even sell it back to the grid, and companies also starting to install. But the difference is that on the scale. So I see how India now moving it in a much bigger scale than what we are moving in Indonesia. And in the past few years also, we are starting to install some of the wind turbine. But yeah, what's next after that? What's next after the first installation? Yeah, so there's a lot of question, and what Paika said, maybe what we are doing now can trigger more of this kind of collaboration to do it more. Even if it is small, if it is cumulative, that it will be big as well. That's what I thought.
Right.
Yeah, from my side, yeah. Regarding Pariki comment and Kostop comment. So Pariki comment that energy should not be centralized. I agree, considering Indonesia's special condition, yeah, not like India. And then Pak Kostop said that, okay, for motivation is, it is not getting cheaper energy, but producing energy. So this comment from Pak Ricky and Pak Kostop and also Pak Eko nicely fit in as a big umbrella for the direction of energy in Indonesia, in my personal opinion, as a layman. But I think it fits very nicely. But the issue is, are the people ready? Are the government ready? How about the regulation? And especially, actually, mindset. I'm still worried about mindset. In India, maybe the mindset is everybody understand, we use import fuel and it's very expensive. So let us be independent of this expensive fuel as a source of energy. That in Indonesia, I think is still not around yet.
Because we have cheap energy, but.
Exactly, but exactly.
It's because of subsidy. Subsidy.
See, Pak Ricky, Pak Eko, you may agree. Currently, the fuel which is available in Indonesia will be around, say, Euro 2 levels, right? And there has been talks about going to Euro 4 or jump the regulatory side. But the refineries are not yet moved to produce, say, Euro 5 or Euro 5, Euro 6 kind of equivalent fuels. Because higher the number, then it increases the cost also. Let's say like in India, it's already Euro 6 equivalent now. We call it Bharat State 6, BS6 kind of thing. So when you increase the or reduce the COX and NOX from the fuel and refine it further, then the cost goes up. And if you see the volumes, it would be, let's say, like multiple times what you have in Indonesia, right? So it's a completely different ballgame. And then for the main source, you are dependent on, say, import, then it is not going to work. The dollar bill or the import bill for the government will always be very, very high. And then it's not a viable thing. And all the cost or the inflation and other things are related to the fuel prices, because if the fuel prices go up, the transportation costs go up, and thus the basic commodities, right, from the vegetables to groceries to all costs go up. But if you are able to, you know, have it locally produced, the cost could be controlled because you are able to manage in terms of the inflation indexes and also the other things. More so, you are generating employment at the grassroots level. So it supports to reduce the migration from rural to urban areas. So things become much more manageable in terms of creating infrastructure for a smart city or at the district level or at the province level or at the village level. So things start falling in place. So that's basically how the sustainability would evolve, by going as a locally producing energy and then distributing it to the various nodes or the consumption points. So that was Paika and Paiko and Parike. I would like to hear your comments.
I couldn't agree more, Paika. This is the fact. Yeah. For me, it's like a local is making it more efficient, because we know if we talk about carbon footprint, distribution is also one of the biggest source of carbon footprint, right? So if you can produce locally, it can be more efficient. It also can, for environmental and social issue, it will be easy to take care, even though the economic, because you can like that empowering the people around that area, and it's not centralized, because if you, in Indonesian case, like the big money is only surrounded in Jakarta. Even in other areas, never get that kind of money. I don't want to go to political. I will go back to the practical back. So mm-hmm. Indonesia currently they just focus on the number of potential renewable energy, but they never talk about the locus or the location. Yes, we can say like a geothermal is, we have 23.9 gigawatt potential, or bioenergy we have 32.6 gigawatt potential. But when we ask where is the potential? Is it in the West Indonesia, East Indonesia, or Central Indonesia? I think for me, I believe the best planning is you can start from the locus. Where you want to build, maybe you can say an NTB, Nusa Tenggara Barat. When you say about NTB, you need to focus on them, like what their potential there, and how the social, sociological or the culture there that can fit with their potential, and it can be like a last conflict project, because. You know, we have like a several problems. Like renewable energy have a conflict with local people, because it can destroy our ancestral place or kind of thing. So I believe like you need to start from you choose the location, you need to see the potential, the social and the sociology situation there, the culture, and also the people there, the economic. What things that cannot that not disrupt them or make a conflict with them, right. That's my opinion.
Pariki, I completely understand and relate what you are referring. So these kind of situations were happening in India also. So a lot of conflicts when you go to a certain place or something. But today the age is of digital age, and there are a lot of youth which are already on, say, Instagram or Facebook, and they are, you know, following a lot many trends. And if the youth is made, you know, kind of, he's able to relate in terms of there's a benefit, then the movement gathers a lot of, you know, pace, and it could be done at a very, very, very fast track. So as it said, let's say like this is a decade for various startups, and there are innovative ideas and various problems which are being solved. So in India, we are seeing it so many startups coming up and with very, very innovative ideas. So around renewable energy, around electrification, around solving the various problems. So I'm very sure these kind of things are also seen in Indonesia. Its only thing is, let's say, like how that visibility is given or taken or, you know, brought to the notice and it becomes a mass movement. It would start small, but I'm very sure, let's say like Pariki working on some biomass project or biofuel project, when it comes to a certain level, it will have that kind of a visibility and it could be replicated in various areas, following the finer aspects of the culture and relating it to what is they need as, you know, as a solution, and then taking it to the various geographies. So I think I'm very, very upbeat about Indonesia and India having these kind of joint efforts and collaborations on various fronts. Because culturally also, we are, you know, quite similar. We got the independence also maybe around the same duration. Indonesia got independence on 17th August 1945. India got it on 15th August 1947. So, matter of 2 years. But culturally, or the finer aspects are very, very similar. So it could be deployed. So the learnings are available and we see how it could be handled or taken it forward.
Yeah, I'm also looking forward to collaborate with India, because like, actually, the one project that crossed my mind is like used cooking oil again, but also, because India has a custom estimated volume like offer 22 million metric tons of vegetable oils, right? So it's quite similar with Indonesia, and it also can be one of the programs can be proposed in India to produce their own energy, people power. We call it in Indonesia, we call it people power, because yeah, it's just the resource is just from your kitchen. Like yeah, everybody cooking with cooking oil right now in Indonesia. So I believe in India as well, because the volume, the consume volume is not so high. And also it's like if you can, we can push that, it's second generation, so it's more sustainable than the first generation from crop plants. And also it's like give people more advantage, right? Because it's from people collecting it, people produce it, people consume it. So for me, in my experience, bottom-up approach is the last conflict approach that I ever, because it's like, yeah, it's from people.
Right. I agree, Pariki. So while we do a bottom-up, we always have to have a top-down also, where we need some funds, because those come from the top, not from the bottom. So we have to play a balance of bottom-up and top-down, so that we can have a scalable version of whatever we create and a replicable version of whatever we create. That's from my side. Maybe Paiko and Paika can add in.
Paiko, do you want to add?
Yeah, a little bit only, Paika. Yeah, so exactly as what has been discussed between Mas Ricky and Pak Kostop. Yeah, so bottom up is the least problematic. When idea comes bottom up, it least problematic. But to enable scalability and reproducibility, top down is also important. I'm agree so much with it, with this statement, because yeah, we have a lot of small scales or bottom up activities around Indonesia. Even in the rural area, there are a lot of people are developing some micro hydro electricity and so on. But the scalability is not there, because there's no initiative from top down to make this initiative as big as possible. Yeah. So that's what I can add on, Paika.
Okay, I think today's conversation is very interesting, and it comes to the focus on about decentralizing and about bottom up and top bottom. And in my opinion, if I may add a small word to these keywords or key point, is that maybe in Indonesia it is time to change the top bottom is not providing the energy. Top bottom is helping distributing and buying the energy from bottom up. Because okay, to increase the scalability, there must be a market, right? And who provides the market? The top, in my opinion. But anyway, this is just a wild opinion because of the very low cost of energy in Indonesia, subsidized. Well, to change that, people must change to the understanding if they do renewable energy, they will get something out of it. So this is the final for today's episode. And I hope we can discuss along this thinking again sometime with Pak Riki, Pak Eko, and Pak Kostub. Very interesting.
So, Pak Eka, just maybe taking a cue from your statement, what can be done or what an opportunity I see is G20 presidency is with Indonesia this year, and these kind of mindset change or policy change would be a good tool to be proposed to the government or bring to their attention, you know, so that that creates a forum and also brings in the various elements of, you know, the support and the infrastructure, the know-how, and then the finer, or the as it says, like the devil lies in the details and furthermore in the execution. So once you start executing, we will all know that what are the real challenges. But with a, you know, know-how which is available globally, and if that could be harnessed, these targets could be achieved at a much more faster pace than what it would take to evolve all alone. That's my take. So leave it at that.
Thank you, Pak Kostub. Totally agree. Pak Riki, Pak Eko, any closing statement?
For me, it's like Pak Eka said before about mindset. I just find the survey from Polkov that Indonesia is the highest climate denial percentage rate. We are 21% of Indonesia is climate deniers. So yeah, change paradigm is also one of Indonesia mainly focus right now. It's supposed to be our main focus, because 21% it can be anyone, maybe your neighbor or maybe some people in government. So that's why it's like a change the paradigm. I saw it's also like a big obstacle in Indonesia. After that, it can be, I think it's gonna be more easier if you have the same paradigm, like climate change is real. That's for me.
Okay, Pak. I'll go back to the collective effort, yeah, Pak. So collective effort is good, but again, to leverage, yeah, is we need the coordination to make this collective effort goes together to a bigger scale. I think that's all that I can put in as a closing now.
Okay, thank you very much once again, Pak Riki, Pak Kostub, Pak Eko. So hope we'll meet you again soon to discuss in more detail the main points of the podcast. Thank you.
Thank you, Baika. Thank you, Baika.